Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third episode of Murder Monday on Late Night Crimecast. I'm your host, Robin Steffens, and every month on a random Monday, I will do a Murder Monday podcast in which I discuss psychopaths, serial killers, mass murderers, and more. Because it is Hollow Week, I thought I would discuss a serial killer that has inspired many of the fictional serial killers we see today in media. That would include Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Norman Bates from Psycho, and even Buffalo Bill from The Silence of the Lambs. Today we are discussing Ed Gein. Ed Gein was born in La Crosse County, Wisconsin on August 27, 1906 to his parents George Philip Gein and Augusta Willemine. He grew up in Wisconsin with his parents and his older brother Henry George Gein, and their home life was far from happy. His father was an alcoholic who struggled to keep a stable job, and his mother was a religious fanatic. He basically grew up on his mother's puritanical preachings about the sins of lust and carnal desire. His parents were not even really in love with each other, and it's reported that his mother actually despised his father, but stayed with him only because of her religious beliefs. So he already is living with an unhealthy family dynamic. His mother is super controlling, repressive, demanding, but to make matters worse, his family ends up moving to an isolated area in 1915 when he's about 9 years old. The family of four finds a new home in a 155-acre farm in the small town of Plainsfield, Wisconsin. And if you think his mother took advantage of this isolation, well, yes, she absolutely did. She continued to push all of her beliefs on her children, telling them things like women were naturally promiscuous and instruments of the devil. She forbid Ed and Henry from hanging out with people who could have any beliefs different from hers, and she would punish them if they made any friends. She would read the Bible to them every day, and outside of that, they spent most of their time doing chores. And besides school, the boys, they never really left the farm. He was not allowed to grow mentally without his mother trying to force her beliefs down his throat, and he was not allowed to have the normal communication with others outside of his home, so that's all he knew. He was isolated, and that reflected a lot on him and his mannerisms, his behavior. I mean, his classmates and teachers would say that he was shy and quiet, and they would also point out that he had weird mannerisms, which made him an easy target to bullies. He would do things like laugh to himself, which is totally appropriate alone, but you know that something like this in public is something that you would expect from a child who was not well adjusted to normal human interaction. So the impact on him, it was great, but we wouldn't know this until further down the line. Despite all of this, Ed really adored his mother. He loved her and was very devoted to her, which is something I'll tell you more about later. So that was his childhood. Now let's fast forward a bit. On April 1st, 1940, his father dies from heart failure at age 66. At the time, Ed is around 33, and of course this is a huge blow to the family, not only emotionally, but financially. Ed and his brother Henry now have to start making money for the household with their father gone. So the brothers, they start doing odd jobs around town to help bring in money. And it's then that things start changing a bit for them. They get started, they have more normal conversations with people, interacting with people. Neighbors consider both boys to be reliable and honest. Ed even becomes a babysitter to many in their community. Many people say that he often related more to children than adults, which really makes sense to me because I feel like the isolation and the treatment from his mother could have really stunted him mentally. But then there's his brother Henry, who, I mean, I didn't really talk about earlier, but he's kind of the opposite of Ed. He has rebelled against his mother openly, talked badly about her in front of Ed, And, you know, Ed really admires his mom and thinks so highly of her. And so for him to do that, it probably, like, really badly affected their relationship. But, you know, his brother spoke often about how he worried about the influence their mother had on Ed. So yeah, he was completely different, and it seems that he wanted to start a life for himself and kind of move away from his mother's control over him and his brother. So, you know, pretty soon after they started working in the town, Henry started dating a divorced single mother of two, which clearly goes against literally everything that they were raised on. Everything that their mother tried to drill into their brains. So I know that that had to cause some major conflict within the family, especially between the brothers, because Ed, he wanted to protect his mom. So things probably got a lot worse when Henry decided that he wanted to move in with the woman he was dating. And I mean, at this point, Henry, he's in his late 30s. He's about 5 years older than Ed. And so it's more than reasonable for him to want to move out of the house and start a family of his own. But because of how controlling his mother was and how they were raised, he was pretty much committing a huge sin in the eyes of his family. And so I just want you to keep this in mind for what I'm about to tell you guys next. So on May 16th, 1944, Henry and Ed are burning vegetation on their property when the fire gets out of control. The fire is so bad that the local fire department takes notice of it and they get involved. They help put the fire out, and by the end of the day, the fire is gone. And it just so happens that that's when Ed reports his brother is missing. So it's nighttime, and a search party sets out to look for Henry, and they quickly discover his dead body lying face down. He had been dead for a bit, and his body had not been burned or injured. His cause of death was actually marked as heart failure, and the police quickly dismissed the possibility of foul play. And so, you know, his body was looked at, and the cause of death was officially listed as asphyxiation. And because of this, no official investigation was conducted. So that means no autopsy was performed. And, you know, I just talked about it and the history between the brothers. In my opinion, Ed definitely had something to do with it. You start a fire with your brother, you know, so-called trying to clear vegetation, but you don't realize until the end of the day that he's missing, possibly having gotten caught in the fire. Like, wouldn't that be your first thought to make sure that your brother, the one person that was with you when the fire started, you know, was he okay? It honestly doesn't make sense. But you know what does make sense? Ed adored his mom and his brother didn't, and Henry went openly against his mother and openly spoke badly of his mother. So, I mean, that would be Ed's motive to kill Henry. And I'm not the only one who believes this. Many people believe that Ed killed his brother, but of course, because of the way the death was handled and that there was no investigation, there's nothing to really go off of. Now, after Harry died, it's just Ed and his mom living alone at the farm. And I was unable to find out why or if it was related to Henry's death, but soon after Henry dies, his mother ends up having a stroke that paralyzes her. After this, Ed decides he's gonna step up to the plate and really care for his mom. And he did just that, at least for a while, until December 29th, 1945. That day, his mother dies after having numerous strokes. So after the death of his mother, Ed is clearly distraught. He has no one at this point, and the loss of his mother is the biggest loss yet. But, you know, he stayed at the farm and he kept up with the bills and continued to do odd jobs. He boarded up rooms used by his mother. This includes the upstairs, the downstairs parlor, and living room. He left them untouched. He basically wanted to preserve any space that his mother had often occupied. And don't worry, it gets weirder, but I'll get into that later. So he boards up all of these spaces and he just lives in a small room next to the kitchen. Besides that, no one so much as even hears anything about Ed. He continues to do his odd jobs and he continues to live isolated from everyone. And no one hears anything about him until over a decade later, on November 16th, 1957. So initially, the police were looking for a woman named Bernice Warden, the owner of a hardware store in Plainsfield, and the mother of the town's deputy sheriff, Frank Warden. So because she runs a shop, clearly people are going to expect it to be open, but that day, it wasn't. A neighbor reported that the hardware store's truck had been driven from the back of the building around 9:30 a.m., and then the store was closed for the rest of the day. And while it was kind of weird, some of the customers just thought that maybe it was because it was deer hunting season. But then her son, the freaking sheriff deputy, was able to enter the store. And that same day, around 5, he goes in and he finds the store's cash register open and bloodstains on the floor. So he immediately knows something is wrong, that there's some type of foul play, and he basically tries to figure out all the people that his mother could have come in contact with that could have possibly done harm to her. And then he finds evidence that Ed had been in the store the evening before his mother's disappearance. He knows this because a sales slip for a gallon of antifreeze was the last receipt written by his mother, and on it, it was that Ed would return for the antifreeze the same morning that she had gone missing. So immediately the police are on the alert for Ed, and that same day during the evening, Ed is arrested at the West Plainsfield grocery store. So Ed's arrested and they take him in, but they still don't know where Bernice Warden is. So they go up to the farm where Ed lives. There, a sheriff deputy discovers her decapitated body in a shed on Ed's property. She's hung upside down by her legs with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrist. She had been shot with a .22 caliber rifle, and she actually died from that. But once she had died, her body was mutilated from her torso, you know, basically cut down the middle. And it doesn't say which deputy found her, but I really hope that it was not her son. That's some horror movie level, unimaginable shit right there. Whether it's your family that happens to or not, but, you know, that's not even the worst part. Yes, it gets worse. Here are some of the details that even knowing will want to make you sleep with the light on. After discovering the body, they go into the house to find any other evidence, and this is a huge list of everything they found on the property. They find whole human bones and fragments, a wastebasket made of human skin, human skin covered several chair seats, skulls on the bedpost, female skulls, some with the top sewn off, bowls made from human skulls, a corset made from a female torso skinned from shoulders to waist, leggings made from human leg skin, masks made from the skin of female heads. A woman named Mary Hogan's face was a mask. Her skull was also found in a box. Bernice Warden's entire head was found in a burlap sack. Bernice Warden's heart was found in a plastic bag in front of Ed's pot-bellied stove. There were 9 vulvas found in a shoebox. A young girl's dress and the vulvas of 2 females, judged to have been around 15 years old, was found as well. There was a belt made from female human nipples, 4 noses, a pair of lips on a window shade drawstring, a lampshade made from the skin of a human face, and fingernails from female fingers. So all of this was found and taken in as evidence. And of course, they took tons of pictures of everything for evidence, but I'm sure they destroyed that shit because, I mean, it's freaking horrific and disgusting. So next they have to question Ed, and this is what he has to say for all of the body parts he had in his home. He tells investigators that in between 1947 and 1952, he made as many as 40 visits to 3 local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies. He said that when he did this, he was in a dazed state, and that during about 30 of the visits, he came out of the dazed state while in the cemetery and returned home empty-handed. And fun fact, sometimes Ed would dig up the graves of recently buried middle-aged women he thought resembled his mother, and he would take those bodies home where he would create his body of work. That is not a tasteful joke, but you know, anyway, he basically admitted to stealing from all of these graves from local cemeteries, and he leads investigators to all the locations. And so he had robbed the graves while the graves were not completed, and while the investigators believed he couldn't have dug it up himself, the bodies were left exactly as Ed said they would be, and so these findings basically corroborated his confession. And remember how I said it gets worse earlier? Well, it gets even more worse. And I'm guessing this is where the idea for Norman Bates really comes in. So after his mother's death, Ed begins to create a woman suit. He basically wanted to, I guess, stitch together all these parts of women that looked like his mom so that he could become his mother to literally crawl into her skin. Yes, very sweet. So even though some of these body parts came from those already dead, he did actually kill people, clearly Bernice Worden, but also he admitted to shooting Mary Hogan, who was a tavern owner missing since 1954. And I mentioned earlier that her head was found in his house. He actually denied memory of details of her death, but it's said that both her and Bernice Worden looked very similar to his mom. So even though there were really only two confirmed bodies, he was considered a suspect in several other unsolved cases in Wisconsin. During questioning for these disappearances, a sheriff reportedly assaulted Ed by banging his head and face into a brick wall, and as a result, Ed's initial confession was ruled inadmissible. So with that being said, during the first arraignment, Ed was charged with one count of murder, and he pled not guilty by reason of insanity. This was in late 1957, and clearly he was deemed unfit for trial, as he was evaluated and diagnosed with schizophrenia and found to be mentally incompetent. So he basically gets sent to a maximum security facility for the criminally insane called Central State Hospital. He's later transferred to another hospital, but basically, man's crazy. He's in a mental institution for like a decade. And then in 1968, it's determined that he can finally participate in his own defense and go to trial. The trial begins on November 7th, 1968, and it lasts literally 1 week. In that week, he is found guilty of killing Bernice Worden. He was only convicted of that one murder, no idea why, but the judge said in reference to that, and I'm just quoting here, "Due to prohibitive costs, Gein was tried for only one murder, that of Miss Worden. He also admitted to killing Mary Hogan." So that's that, I guess. But anyway, there's a second trial that deals with his insanity, and they still rule him not guilty by reason of insanity. And so he is returned to the Central State Mental Hospital, and he remains there until his death from lung cancer in 1984. So what happens to his huge property in House of Horrors? Well, his possessions are actually auctioned off, and his house is eventually destroyed by a fire that I'm guessing was arson, but you know, the police turned a blind eye to it, and you know, I'm guessing they're just pretending it was an accident. I'm pretty sure it was arson, but you know, at this point, who cares? So Ed was actually still alive at the time that his house burned down, and when he learned of the incident, he was in his mental institution detention center, and guess what? He didn't even care. He just shrugged and said, "Just as well." So that's going to be the end of this extra gruesome Hollow Week Murder Monday. Now I'm going to cuddle up with a bowl of candy and watch good old Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Thank you guys for tuning in this week. Check us out on Instagram. And don't forget to come back this Thursday on Halloween for the next podcast. Bye, guys. Mm-hmm.